There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello, my name is Gary Mansfield, and this is the Ministry of Arts podcast, where each week I'll be speaking to a different artist. Now let's begin by bagging these bongos. Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 211 of the Ministry of Arts podcast. Well, today we've only gone and got the notorious Billy Childish. And this episode is sort of related to last week's episode 210, which was Steve Lowe from L13. And if you're not aware, L13 is a sort of stable of four artists, among a lot of other things. But those four artists are Harry Adams, Billy Childish, Jimmy Courtney and Jamie Reid. Well, I'd wanted to speak to L13 and that list of artists ever since I started the podcast. And I tried several times but never really got anywhere. But then, you know what it's like with persistence. So as I say, last week was Steve Lowe, who was the founder of L13 and one half of Harry Adams. Today we've got Billy Childish. Jimmy Courtney has agreed, and we're just trying to sort out a date. And I'm currently exchanging emails with Jamie Reid and hoping for a positive outcome there. Back to Billy Childish. Billy invited me up to his studio, which is in the historic Chatham Dockyards, which, funnily enough, is where I met Steve Lowe from L13 as well, who happened to be there that day. And I'd heard so much about Billy, I was really quite nervous to meet him, you know, because I genuinely didn't know how he'd take me. Because I was well aware that he speaks his mind and he definitely doesn't take fools gladly, that's for sure. In the early days, he was better known as a poet who had a, well, very well documented relationship with Tracy Emin and then being one of the original members of the Stuckist movement, all of which obviously gets covered in this episode. His studio in the dockyard is fascinating. It's full to the brim of paintings, from large right up to very large. And I was lucky enough to turn up when he was working on a painting. And I can't remember the size which he stated at the time, but I think it was something like 6 by 10 feet. And when I arrived, there was a sort of horizon line going through the middle of the canvas. And he was halfway through setting out the composition of a standing figure. Throughout the time I was there, which was maybe 2.5, 3 hours, he'd drawn that central figure, the foreground, the background. He'd done the underpainting. And pretty much completed it by the time I left. He works at an astonishing pace and knots. No wonder the studio was full of canvases. It's great because as we're talking, you can hear the bristle sort of working the paint into the canvas. And because the canvas was so big, we couldn't really use microphones because I'd have had to have sort of stood behind him with the mic in front of him. So I just put the recording device on a stepladder just behind him as he worked. And sometimes he'd walk away to another part of the fairly large studio to tell me about something. And that being a little bit of a gamble because I wasn't sure whether the mics would pick it up or not. But luckily it did, and just it added to the atmosphere, you know. But yeah, a great episode. He's honest, he's open, he's pretty much filterless. And yeah, all the makings of a great episode. So please, come and join me in the studio of Billy Childish.
This is the funny thing as well, you see, because I sort of like slag off a load of stuff, people presume that it means I think what I do is good, which is not the case. You know, I can only do what I can do, and I don't understand at all what it's about. I've got no choice.
Well, as you may be able to imagine, my technique, interview technique, even if it can be called that, is a lot looser than what you may be used to, that's for sure.
Well, don't forget that this is something that is different in being in, like with Steve, he's played in groups. I played a punk rock group in 77, and I've played since, non-stop. And if you're in groups, your attitude to the world, and don't forget, we never signed contracts or went with anyone. We always stay completely independent. Our attitude to the world is far different from artists who are much more worried about what they do.
Yeah.
Where, I mean, a lot of musicians are, but they are more relaxed generally. And because you work with other people, and of course, if you're in a group with a load of mates, it may as well be in the army.
Yeah.
You're just taking the piss out of each other continually.
Of course.
So what happens is you've got either, you could say thick skin, or you've woken up to the idea that maybe you're not quite as great as you think.
Either way.
Either way.
They both work. So where did the music start, Billy?
The music?
Yeah.
Well, really, from when I was a kid, my father brought home some Beatles and Kinks and some Rolling Stones records and Bob Dylan records when I was three years old, and I really liked it. And our next door neighbour, a few years older, and she was really into the music as well.
And where was home then? Where in Kent?
Waterslade. Waterslade Road. It's about three miles from here.
Oh, okay.
And it's village on the edge of the countryside. But when I say village, we're right up. The village was down the way. We were on the Waterslade Road. The secondary modern school's next to us, and the council estate's opposite.
Yeah.
So it was turned into an overflow for London from...
Yeah, just
50s.
Like where I was, yeah. And what did your dad do for a living?
Well, my grandfather's an able seaman.
Yeah.
And my nan's in service. But then my dad's sister was into art a bit.
Oh, yeah.
And John copied her, my dad. He got into art a bit. He went into... He managed to get into a drawing office, and he did his national service. And my dad's a sort of narcissistic sociopath and real clumber, and he totally reinvented himself.
Yeah.
And then he ended up being, when I was a kid, he became the art director at the Daily Mirror.
Oh, wow.
Then he started his own company, design company, in the mid-60s, doing sort of corporate, sort of like what would these days be sort of corporate identity things, logos
yeah,
and stuff, before you can make a huge amount of money out of it.
Oh, there you go.
And then, my mum was till got a lot of the fevers, but then when she got married, she was a housewife.
So was there any art in the home?
Yeah, my dad,
creativity?
Yes, a lot of it, because my dad painted. His sister painted, and he wanted to be like his sister. She was into jazz. They were called Mouldy Figs, these jazzers in the 50s.
Brilliant.
And my dad was sort of like interested in being a bit of a bohemian when he was younger, before he came in ultra conservative.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting that.
He left home when I was about six or seven.
So would you describe yourself as an ultra conservative?
I'm conservative by nature, Labour by politics.
Okay, that's a good answer.
I'm definitely conservative by nature, yeah. But, you know, in the proper sense, I think.
Yeah.
Of what it should mean.
Yeah.
I mean, I sort of like, I'm not really into the, I've always voted Labour, and my Labour politics would be that you should try to equalise education as much as possible, give everyone a fair chance, and everyone have a fair crack at the whip, educational-wise. Yeah. I'm not much interested in the policing people's language or their beliefs.
No,
see, I find that slightly patronising and also just handing the enemy a pistol, you know.
Yeah.
I think there's like, and I've thought this right from the get-go, like 30 or 40 years ago, I said they're just going to antagonise the right, lot, and we're going to have, you know, see
it's
it coming.
Change the face of it, yeah.
Yeah.
Which it's definitely done that.
Yeah.
So, how would you explain what you would do to someone that doesn't know your work?
I'd make pictures. With that art stuff we were just talking about, when I get talked to people about, if I'm being sarky, which I often am, if I'm talking to the art people, I say, well, I leave the art to that lot, I make pictures.
Yeah.
Because I prefer it, I'm actually an artistic type, but of course, I'm also, I was slated so much for being a painter by that sort of...
Back then, yeah.
By Trace and all that lot.
Which they all paint now.
Yeah, and I said to Trace at the time, I said, you will have to paint because it's all there is.
Yeah.
You're going to have to go back to it because that's what there is. But of course, you know, you spend 20 years not painting or 30 years not painting, you can't be surprised if you're not very good at it.
Yeah.
Because you just missed your apprenticeship.
Well, she got in the RA off the back of her drawing, didn't she?
Well, don't know about that. I think that, like, the thing with Tracy and Damien on a serious level is that they are phenomena.
Yeah.
And people like phenomena. And that's fine, you know. But I think that, I know what drawing is, even if other people don't. And people can think they know about stuff, and that's fine. I don't mind.
So how would you explain what you do to someone who isn't into art?
I make pictures.
It's still the same.
Yeah. I make pictures that... if someone asks me... I meet a taxi driver, and he says, what do you know? Has she got beret on? I said, yeah. He says, what do you do that for? I say, because I don't like people telling me what to do. Same as, you're a cabbie.
Excellent.
And then they say, so what do you do? And I says... He says, what sort of rubbish do you do then, or whatever? I say, well, I make big pictures, generally, that you would recognise what they are.
Yeah, nice.
And I said, now, of course, I've got no problem with the abstract, but my point is that the abstract is already present, so it doesn't need to be amplified, because the abstract's already there.
Yeah.
You know, because the abstract element of figurative painting is the bit I like. I don't tell the taxi driver that.
No, of course.
Get out of here!
And take your moralistic views with you.
Get out of fucking care. And when they say to me, when they talk to me about gay marriage and they complain about that, I say, don't worry, mate, it's not compulsory.
Yeah.
Not yet.
Yeah, you won't have to do it yourself.
Yeah, don't worry, mate.
I'm just watching you draw here. What's the... What or why the border?
Well, there's a long story with that border thing. It goes right back to the phone as
well. Just for anyone that's listening, you've got maybe an inch to 2 inch border left on the canvas.
Well, this actually first came up because my older brother, who happens to be a painter and went to Slade, is 4 years older than me, and he was a star student at Royal and Slade, whilst I was expelled from St Mark's. So it's not like this. And he was a grammar school boy, and I'm a secondary school boy.
Yeah, I'll be
left at 16. So it's got this different sort of approach to things. But Nick used to put a border on his paintings, I presume he might have borrowed it off of some of those futurists or whatever. Now, I did see a wooden border put around something by Kurt Schwitter. He's a massive fan of Kurt Schwitter. And that partially got involved, but what happened was, it's a painting on cheap cardboard, and you haven't got a frame, so we're making a back for the pictures of some of them
away
there. And I'll show you some of the really early bits. And so then you've not got a frame, so why not paint a frame?
Yeah.
So
I figured
then,
that's where it's going
to
go.
And then when I got to this stage, we also found that, like, once you've got large canvases, it's also very easy to move them around because you haven't got wet face on the paint. So we were putting brackets in to stack them because I paint a lot.
Yeah.
So sometimes this studio is just empty because we just put that truck in there.
Just empty. You've got about 400 fucking canvases.
We just took a huge load for a show in New York, and they're out there.
Wow.
And then you want to stack them, and you can put buffers between you, see, on those corners.
Yeah.
And also, it's sort of like it just became a thing we did. Interestingly, like when you mentioned Trace, Trace's early work. Did it as well because she put it off.
Oh, okay, there you go.
It comes from my brother Nick, as far as I know.
But either way, it works visually and practically.
Yes, and it's sort of like, I don't know, it's like, Chris used to say to me, what would they be like without the borders? And I say, very much the same, but without the borders.
just 4 inches wider.
And the other thing is I also think it's sort of, I'll make the decision.
Yeah.
Where the edge of this is.
Yeah.
And being a control freak, I think it might come into that as well. Because they're pitched their windows, aren't they, into a dream world. And, you know, it's nice to have a frame around your picture.
Yeah, of course. And if anyone was to frame it, it's not intruding onto the paint itself.
Yeah, what you'd have to do is box them like that.
Yeah.
Good in box frames.
Like tray frame, yeah.
Yeah, very nice. But yeah, tray, that's right. Yeah, I think they could look quite good. If you were inclined to go that way.
So when did you realise that you wanted to be an artist, do you think?
Primarily about sort of like 7 or 8.
Wow, okay.
I was really into Van Gogh, and we had we had Van Gogh picture print up at home, and we had art books because my dad liked art and my mum liked art. So we were also sort of like, we weren't really literary family, but because my brother was a grammar school boy, my parents had books, but my father didn't really, my father was still a Bulgarian, really. But my brother Nick, being at grammar school, and he was interested in some poetry and brought some books home. And although I couldn't read and write till I was about 14, I sort of, my big brother was a massive influence on my taste in things, because I was looking at Bacon and Edward when I was 10.
Yeah, wow.
And then, and so also I've got that out of my system early.
I didn't hit that until I was 26, when I got introduced to
it. Which with me, so like I said, like, you know, I sort of like, it's the same as with the music. What happened was, is like once I got into the punk rock thing in 76, I just sort of like, 77, 76, 77, we just started. After that, I didn't like where anything went, and I just went backwards into the swamp. And that is where that's where you find all your friends and the true artists is back in the swamp, because they've all been there, they've all done it, and they've all been at battle. all been at battle with the wankers.
Yeah. So when did the poetry hit? Before or after the visual?
Definitely after, because I couldn't read and write. But I was I used to write stuff anyway, very dyslexic. And they said I had a very good mind for story. Making.
Yeah.
So I used to write little stories and things, creative stuff at school. And then in 77, when punk rock came around, I wanted to do a fanzine and I started putting some poetry in. And I got asked to sing in a group. So I started writing.
Progression.
And I really liked nursery rhymes and dark nursery rhymes and Lewis Carroll and these things.
But the simplicity of the rhyme.
Yeah, and also the darkness of it. And then when I went to, take it back a bit, I left school when I was 16, worked in the dockyard, I applied to art school, wasn't allowed to have my work seen because no qualifications.
Yeah.
And then I worked in this dockyard, got in as an apprentice.
In here family, where we are now?
Yeah, when it was a Royal dockyard.
Yeah.
Which was where both my grandparents were as well. And then, I then made lots of drawings in the tea huts, and I took all them up because my brother was at Slate, so I used to go up to London on block release at the Building College in South London as an apprentice stonemason, And I used to stand squat with my brother up in Chalk Farm. And so I knew the people at Slade, and I showed them my pictures. They wouldn't look at them, my drawings I was doing in the dockyard. So I just walked into St Martin's, took them in, they accepted me on foundation.
Wow, there you go.
So then I applied to get a grant, and because it's out of our region, I wasn't allowed to go, and they told me to go to my local college. And I said, well, they won't look at my work, because I've no qualifications.
Yeah.
They said they will now. If you can get accepted at St Martin's, you can be accepted anywhere.
Wow.
So then I went up there, and I told them I don't want to come here. And they said, well, you're coming here. And I was, within the first week, I was expelled from 3D and printmaking.
Yeah.
Then I was put on probation and deemed at the end of the year not to have completed the course. So they did that so I wouldn't be able to go to do a painting degree.
Wow.
So then I took, and I was really into Kurt Schwitz and Dada. So I took all my collages up to St Martin's, walked in there, went into the painting department and got him on the spot again.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I went up there and they were doing abstract expressionism in 78. And that was, I didn't like any of it. And I was interested in, it's really weird because I was interested in sort of like Van Gogh, Munch and Kurt Schwitters. So I made lots of colours.
Yeah, but I really liked
figurative painting. So I walked out after Corporate Turn in 78. And then I was still doing my music and things. And then Thatcher came in and I was trying to get off the doll. And obviously I've got no qualifications.
So you applied again.
So I applied to
So you didn't have to get a job.
Yeah, and I applied in 1980 and got in. That's the year I was on the team.
Yeah.
With Pete Doig. And he was my one friend. And he said,
Did he have a similar attitude to you?
He liked
Why did you deal with him?
He liked figurative painting and he liked rock and roll.
Okay. That's good enough reason, isn't it?
So we went down the shop to the Chuck Berry Records. And
yeah, of course.
And he'd heard the music, the Milchats groups I was in at the time. 1980 or 81, I also still ran small presses and things because I did this poetry which I started when I done my fanzines, so just Xerox magazines.
Yeah, Hangman.
Then it was called Fireoid and it just turned into Hangman around that period, and that was a very important thing because Pete said to me, me and my mate Sexton Min wrote a lot of things about horses and things, but we
cultured them.
Yeah, just mate of mine. We did about poetry with like silly songs about horses. And he said, you should read this guy, he writes about horses. And he gave me a Charles Bukowski book.
Yeah.
And then that set me off because then I saw that, thought, oh, you can write about all the things that happened to you. And then I went into John Fante and then into Dostoevsky. And that's sort of like really when the writing sort of like turned into being confessional, big confessional stuff. And start writing novels around that type of thing.
And how did you, was you able to sell that confessional stuff?
Not
very
easily.
It's a hard sell, wasn't
it? No, but you still can't.
Yeah.
I mean, I still can't get published, you know, my novels.
Yeah.
No one wants to do them. Because they're, and it was really, you know, there was a lot of opposition at the time. I mean, like, after I was expelled from St Martin's for partially full writing confessional poetry.
Oh, yeah.
I see. So, because I was getting printed on a Xerox machine down at the art school down there.
Oh, okay.
And they complained to them.
Oh.
And I had no grant to go to school. And my father then went down for drug smuggling.
Yeah.
So we had no money. And I was spending time down there. And they I was expelled. And that is when I ran into Tracy, because all my paintings were in a bedsit place we lived.
Yeah.
And Tracy knew someone who lived there. And she was doing fashion at Midway.
So what was that, like mid-80s?
No, 1981.
Oh, got you.
And she wanted to do painting. So she then left fashion course, and then she applied to Masonry printmaking after a bit.
Yeah.
And then she ran the, she did the, much more press, and you know, although she was really against what I wrote, she still...
Oh, she didn't like it?
Oh, no, she hated it.
Oh, did she?
She said it like shit. Like, oh yeah, I mean, Trace said she...
So did she was, did she sell it or something? Or?
Yeah, she was. We turned her up in a performing bear costume, which was a 50s swimsuit, which was stiletto heels.
Brilliant.
And she'd go around the shops and sell all the... So she'd sell anything to anyone.
Yeah.
And my mum said that girl sell fridges to Eskimos.
Good.
Good.
And
you're dressed in a bear suit with high heels.
Well, when it's bear suit, I mean, we call it performing bear suit. It's a 50s swimsuit. But it's,
yeah, I've got you.
There's some pictures of her on the back of some of the stuff with me that on. And she, even though she was really, you know, that I wrote about us, and it was very graphic. And
about your relationship?
Oh, all the time, yeah.
Got you.
And that's the sort of irony, because she was so against that.
I wasn't aware of
and
that.
And then she was really against, she was against swearing and everything. So it's all a bit funny.
So it sounds like it's sort of your idea that she's run with them.
Well, some people have pointed that out.
Wow, I weren't aware of that. It's weird, isn't it? Okay.
Yeah, well, we don't. You can mention that far, but this is off the record.
Yeah.
Is that she would, you know, like, that's what she didn't want people to know.
Wow.
And also, her confessional stuff, this is definitely off the record.
Yeah, got it.
Her confessional stuff is dubious about the truth of it.
Yeah,
Because I was sexually abused and wrote about this stuff. And Trace is someone who taught, do anything to be centre stage.
Yeah.
And I never heard anything about that at all till years and years later as it sort of developed. And I mean, and also sort of like, I think she believes some
you're not
of
the first one to say that.
She believes some of it, but it's not true.
No, you're not the first one to say that, and this is obviously staying out as well. Yeah. A few people of that era who I've done stuff with, they've confided and said, like, you know, there's a lot of, the edges have been gilded quite a lot around her, but she's, you know, she's doing it, she's running with it, and
yeah, that's right.
She's made it her own. Now it's become real,
hasn't it? Yeah, that's exactly. And she's like, I mean, I saw a thing with Tracy the other day, and she said, like, they were saying, Tracy, anyone who's ever been an influence, a major influence, that. She sort of mentioned Lee Bailey in some sort, but said, no one really. I mean, Tracy used to come around my house, throw stones at the window, copy all of my paintings, anything I was doing, and was totally 100% obsessed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I used to not be, I wouldn't live with her, and she used to, like, just, she is the most intense.
Yeah, even a little bit I've known her,
yeah.
She is fucking hard work.
Yeah, and I wouldn't do it. So anyway, yeah.
That aside.
That aside, yeah. But you know, that's the way she is. But the really ridiculous thing about it, because this is all, I mean, we can, it, I mean, it's all my stuff is published.
Yeah.
At the time, so you can't. Mine is like,
so why did you keep on with the confessional stuff if it wasn't selling? Was it just because it was an escape getting it out of you and you needed to create it?
I needed to do that or start kill myself or start killing.
Yeah. Same as painting or whatever. Yeah,
yeah, it was. It. I mean, I know it's...
To start killing, I've just...
No, seriously, like, I mean, really...
Yeah.
I mean, I was sexually abused on 9. I missed
you
up.
Were?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah, that's fine. That's all that then. This is all the stuff that's done. That's why it's so funny, because as I say, like, again, off record, like, because Tracy knew this, because I was writing about all these things.
Yeah.
And she never mentioned anything about anything like that. And she would do anything to take over the conversation and be sent to say anything. She hadn't worked out that you could use that.
Yeah. Wow. And what was that? Was that, if that one dealt with you, was that family?
It was a friend of the family.
Yeah, genuinely. And how long did it take you to come to terms with it, accept it, or live with it?
I started first mentioning it in those nursery rhymes when I was 17, and then explicitly, when I was 21, I could explicitly talk about, I found out that you could explicitly talk about your experience. And I learned that from, essentially, from reading Bukowski.
Yeah. Well, that first thing is accepting it by taking ownership and and mentioning it. And then after that, it's, yeah, well,
I was alcoholic for until I was 33. And then I did 7 years intense psychotherapy. And the interesting thing is, of course, is when the time that I gave up drink and everything I was doing was the time that... The Brit up thing was happening.
Yeah, got you.
So I was just doing all things about, real personal truth, and not drugs.
Yeah.
Not I was dry for 18 years as
well. Oh, well. I would think a little bit now, but that's a, like, totally, you know, it was come up or die type thing. It was the second one from the writing, but then I had the thing where my lifestyle was so wrecked that I had to do something completely radical or go down.
You was talking about the rise of Brit art, and you obviously famously were opposed to that type of art.
Well, I thought Banker's Dada, you see. That's what I called it.
Thought it was what, sorry?
Banker's Dada.
Yeah. And was your introduction to that via her?
Yeah. Trace used to invite me along to some of the things, which I only went to three or four of them. I went to two or three of them. Not my sort of thing, you know, especially not drinking and not being up to the...
And was you dry at that time?
Yes, I'd already stopped.
Yeah, well, that blew me up, because it? At the biggest party moment in that bit of art history.
Well, the other thing is they're all that bit younger, you know. If you've got people who are 4 years younger...
Oh, is that what they were?
Oh, they're all, like, Tracy's 4 years younger.
Oh, okay.
So, like, you know, I was... Tracy was 18 and I was 21. We'd already make records. I was... Been to college, expelled from college, toured around, so, like, you know, sort of like, no, far from a grown up.
Yeah, I know what you mean. But you'd been out the college university system for a while.
Well, also, I'd only had war with them when I was in it. So, you said, like, when Trace went to Royal College and things, and that, it was like, to me, it's like, you know, you're in bed with the enemy already, which is interesting. You'll go and teach there again in 2 weeks.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
What is it you're teaching? Painting, drawing, poetry?
What do you call it? A lecture on my work.
Okay.
I might do one.
And what's your lecture?
I don't know. I'll find it when we get there. I'll just talk about, be like, the way I do stuff is like what we're doing here is I just get people to ask me questions and I'll answer them.
Yeah.
Because I've got nothing. I can tell people stories and things that happened, but I've got nothing to say.
Nothing of substance.
Exactly. Nothing of substance.
So then we got to the, like, the Sensations time or that Brit art part of an era of British art.
Yeah.
And then so, I know you've mentioned it a million times, but Stuckism, how did that come about?
Well, all that is a funny thing. What happened was, I was in a group called Midway Poets. And that's when I did Hangman as well, that was my Hangman Poets. And that. But anyway, that was in the late 70s. And I was always at war with Charles Thompson and people within that group.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and because I was, you know, basically take the mic too much, and I was sort of like, he tried to have me banned from readings when he did the TV thing, and they bounced on the door to keep me out.
Okay.
I met him years later, and I'd written this, he'd been following my poetry, and I wrote this poem about, I'd written this poem where I used to go up to town, and when Trace was on the... dole or whatever, I used to sort of give some of my dole money, or if I'd sold some records, I'd give her 20 quid. And she, because she was in real hard times at that time. And then once the Brit art thing kicked off a bit, she used to try and get me to go along to those things, which I didn't own.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
His friends, split up for 10 years or whatever, or 7 or 8 years, I don't know. And she tried to get me along with her, so I didn't really want to. And one night she said to me, I called her from the Victoria Station, and she wanted to meet up. And I said, no, I'm going home. She said, well, my friend is going on stage tonight with nose stuffed full of cocaine. And I said, so, well, that's another reason I'm not going. And she said, she said, your problem is you're stuck. She said, you're stuck. Stuck. You do that stupid painting, write those idiotic poems, and you're just stuck. You know, I don't tolerate people who don't fulfil their potential, all this sort of stuff.
Oh,
I
right.
said, fine, okay. So obviously that just goes straight into a poem. So I just wrote this, you're stuck, still doing those each other. Just do a talking to really? Me. And Charles had seen this, and in the meantime, so this was published quite a lot before, but in the meantime, that was probably written in the 80s, that poem. Maybe very early 90s.
Yeah, yeah.
And then before Trace had her, got nominated for Turner or whatever. And then Charles, and I was trying to promote some local people who did painting, trying to put their exhibitions on. And Charles, I met him in London, Leicester Square, just outside the cinema, Charles Thompson. And he said, I want to form a group, because I was already did this thing, the Hangman Bureau of Inquiry, writing manifestos against Brit Art.
Yeah.
And he said, I want to form a group, and I want to call it Stuckists. And it's based on that poem you've written. He said, would you be in it? And I said, yeah, sure. And he said, right, well, and he sort of trialled on with that. And he said, right, I'm putting in it. I said, we should write manifestos. So I showed him my manifesto. I said, we'll work on that. And he said, right, and I'm going to organise an exhibition. And I said, fine. So he organised this exhibition in East London, and I went along. And I hated all of it. And I said, I'm leaving. I can't be in this group. And Charles said, can you pretend to be in it for the next year? I said, I suppose so.
Yeah.
And of course, it sticks, stuff, because I never went to one demonstration. I never did.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, never. Not interested in any of that stuff. And I didn't like the work. And I mean, I'd press people up, Charles, and people trying to get me to give Tracy's information and phone and all that, which I refused to do.
Well,
so I wouldn't. So that was it. Really.
There's a certain irony that it goes back to her.
Well, I hated it as well. So we're full agreement. We're stuck on that one.
Well, is that right? You paint sometimes 4 or 5 in a day.
I used to. I could do this. I could do this in a day if I concentrated.
What's this one is what, 6 by 10?
Yeah.
Feet.
If it goes all right, I can do one of these in a couple of hours. But, you know, and I don't know what I'm doing. That's what helps.
Well, when I walked in an hour ago, there was just a drawn figure.
Yeah. Well, that and I was only in half hour before you.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And the drawn figure is just shorter than life size. I'm not fully it because he's squatting. He probably is life size.
Yeah,
isn't
he could be, couldn't he? Yeah. He could be life size.
Is there an artwork that you've created that stands out, be it emotionally or?
Yes, I did one self portrait of a bad nervous breakdown about 3 or 4 years ago.
Oh, really? Okay.
And I did a portrait that week, which I liked.
So it crossed the threshold of light.
Yes, like and I did one painting in the New York show that I liked as well.
But you there's obviously ones that work better or mean a little something or
probably.
Told you a story as you was creating them sort of thing.
Well, I only paint to find out what I'm going to paint really. Yeah. So like with this one, I did a big series of these recently, of these sort of Australian Aboriginal figures, and I realised that afterwards I realised what they sort of were was sort of like, you know, this sort of like this search for God and or joining of heaven and earth, which I think is what life's full. So this one is like, this is unusual in the sense I might know roughly what it's about as I'm doing it, but only because I did six of them before and I found out by doing them that that's what they're probably about.
Yeah.
I mean, these I don't know what, you know, I was looking at this, did this last week, these two walks, and I think like, I was wondering what that was about. I thought that, like, I always wonder if the trees are people, and I always wonder if the walls are people as well.
Yeah,
you know, and like, who, like, I mean, is that, these are two workers, but are they, is it sort of like, I mean, everything's a self-portrait in the end. Like, I suppose even everything.
When I looked at the guy on the right.
You may have wondered that, but it wasn't the idea.
Of you. So this one that we're talking about, I'll take a photograph of it actually. So it's a portrait of two farmers, or two, farm workers.
Labourers,
Side by side.
Which again is interesting.
Sickle in hand.
That's another thing I've put, it's because my family are farm labourers. You know?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So where did this, did you paint from a drawing?
No, I work from things I find, photos and things like, you see this here, I'm trying to use that.
Yeah, you're holding a picture of two Aborigine figures fighting, playing with a lake in the background.
Yeah, and I'm using the lake a bit.
Yeah, or a part of the lake.
Yeah,
part of the lake. And it's almost an imaginary depiction of it.
Well, the whole thing's a sort of dreamscape, I presume.
Are you all right with me taking photos of these ones, Billy?
Sure, yeah. It'd be a good line to have colour on it.
So you spent a couple of hours drawing this canvas out?
Possibly.
How long is the painting?
It depends. Well, everything depends on how easy things are working. You know, if the gods are kind, everything goes easy. And sometimes I could still be trying to draw this figure.
Well, it does help that you're not painting within a structured idea. So you're giving yourself a lot of mental freedom to make mistakes or use your mistakes or what have you.
Yeah.
And how many days are you in the studio?
One, usually.
Oh, is it one? Okay.
Yeah, because otherwise I paint too much.
A question that I ask each guest, Billy.
Yeah.
If there was you and five other artists, past or present, what would your ideal group show be?
Ooh. It's very... Well, I'd have to just go... It would be a very weird show, I'd imagine. Because I like, you know, because I just go for, it wouldn't be very well, wouldn't be like a professional curation job.
That's quite right.
It'd be banged straight up the wall. I'd have, I'd be in with all my mates, with Van Gogh, Munch, Delacroix. I might have a Holbein in there. I like a bit of Holbein. Anyone else I like? Do you know any other painters I like, Huddy? Kurt, we'd have to have some Kurt Schwitters.
That's my
one. Maybe we could even probably have a Schmidt Rutloff, couldn't we? A good early one.
See, these paintings could be today or yesteryear, couldn't they?
They
sit everywhere.
You've got it, exactly. And that's what we tried to do with the music as well. Here's the thing, like with people, I knew people who were friends with Damien who were doing this thing called the Idler magazine. And they really liked Damien's stuff. And I did something with him when he was down there in the early days, down in Devon. And they said, like, say, well, if you want Damien, it shows us who, you know, it's a reflection of who we are. I said, who needs that? You want a reflection who you could be or become.
Yeah.
You also want the thing to be any time. And that's really interesting conceptual, because I saw that one of the titles of one of these is The Everywhere.
Which is
an Aboriginal term for the dream time.
Okay.
The other translation for it is The Everywhere. Isn't that a brilliant name?
Yeah, very much.
Yeah. So you're sort of like, you're picking up something there that's hopefully embodied.
Because that's the other thing. You would think that in truth, you would expect that truth wants to be known and will be found out.
We will in the end, normally.
Yeah,
although sometimes it gets a bit shaded along the way, doesn't it?
Yeah, but when
depends
you
whose truth you're fucking listening to.
I know, but I mean, once you get the history thing, that's why I don't care too much about the people knowing all the facts of what went down. Because you watch something like in the Egyptian times, they had pharaohs and things, and they, like some say, right, that guy didn't exist. When every single record destroyed, all the statues taken out, everything's gone.
Yeah.
And they still know about it.
Yeah, yeah.
And you think, oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So the text says, mate, do what you like, mate. The thing will come. And it, who knows, will it be next week?
Yeah.
Will it be,
it's the same.
Will it be everywhere?
Exactly. It's the same in law, isn't it? You know, they always do these cover-ups and what have you. And then just in time, it just can't stay fucking buried forever.
It's weird, isn't it? The truth wants to be out.
Yeah.
Which is really nice thing, because it does make you feel that, like, there's a spiritual element in life.
A sort of yin and yang coming about.
Going to try and sort of, like, move towards wholeness and truth, which is what everything's trying. And this is everything's trying to do, and even the people who get it wrong are only trying to do that. I mean, like, when you fucked up doing your thing, you thought, if I do this, this, and this, I'll get this result, and I'll be okay.
Yeah.
But because the only thing that drives people, where the mistakes happen, and like even with Trump and Hitler and all those people, is because they think that their action is going to bring around the balance that will make them feel right.
Yeah.
They're too stupid to know it won't.
Yeah.
And of course, we're all pretty stupid.
Of course.
And the idea is, I suppose, to get less stupid as possible.
Yeah. Have you ever left these as charcoal drawings?
Once or twice I do, because I usually ruin them when I paint them. The trouble is, if you don't paint it, you feel cheated because you've got all your guns out. And you think, now I'm going to have the fun.
Well, because this is a fucking gorgeous drawing at the moment.
Talking about that stuff, because I just did this big show in New York, and I had six or seven of these, and I had these other spirit guardians that I wanted in it. And really interestingly, the guy in New York, he said, I want to show them because someone, like because of the race thing in New York, like they got one person who had a problem with a white guy painting an Aboriginal. And you sort of think, and I think it's so pathetic because you sort of think, well, one thing it's celebrating, the other thing is, why be upset on behalf of someone else?
Yeah,
and if there is an Aboriginal who's got a problem with it, he's welcome to and he can talk to him about it.
Yeah.
Because you're taking away his right to be annoyed.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got a right to say, what's that about? I'm not like you doing that. I said, well, sorry, mate, this is what I feel about it. We can agree or disagree.
Yeah.
I'm trying to put my case. But the idea that you edit the world.
And is that where these are going?
No, that's done the New York show. This is I don't paint anything for anywhere. So I'm just painting.
Good.
There's definitely no one asking for this. No one asked for that.
They have got a bit of a Germanic sense to them, haven't they?
Yeah. Oh, they're definitely Northern European, not Southern, isn't
they? Well, even without the people, like this view here with the walls.
Well, also, I did a lot of North Pacific Northwest just now, which is where I met my wife. My wife's my father.
Oh, wow, is it?
Yes, okay. I did a lot of the Pacific Northwest.
Do you ever go over the border that you've created?
I actually sometimes do not paint with a border.
Oh, okay.
Very unusual. I'm a very obedient boy.
Oh, you stick by your own rules.
Yeah. I don't know, this is what's really weird, because I don't have any problem with that Brit Art thing, or their success, or who thinks anyone's good. But I do have a problem with not being allowed to say things, or the fact that there's no dialogue
Yeah, what it's presumed contrary before you've even said it.
Yeah, because what's or there's a problem. You've got a problem. I don't care. You know, I'm happy for anyone to do what they like. I mean,
how was you with Peter's success when he got it? Because he's just like blew up, didn't he? He was there. Well, didn't he have the highest selling of any living artist?
Yeah, which highly embarrassed him. I think. With Pete, I was sort of proud of Pete. He's my mate. I like it, but I also thought that the work was okay. When I saw it, just before he had the success thing. I think it must be just before he had that won that prize, the Walker Prize, whatever it's called. And I was meeting him up in town at the studio, somewhere. And I went down there. And I went and I said, "Fucking hell, Pete, you look like a fucking shooter." And he said, "I am." And then. And the next time he had the show at the White Chapel, which was a big turning point, he invited me to that. And I don't go to many things, so I went there. And he said, "Listen, we were chatting, and there's these two tutors there from St. Martin's." He said, "Oh, this is brilliant. He was at St. Martin's as well." I said, "So we don't remember you." I said, "No, well, I was expelled." And they said, "Why is that?" I said, "Because I'm a cunt." And then there's this sort of like dreadful silence. And I said to Pete, "Maybe I should go." He said, "Yeah, maybe."
Yeah.
I couldn't help myself,
It's one of the most descriptive words out there, isn't it?
Oh, it's so good, isn't it?
Is that a usual colour to paint with? I can see that coming through.
I'm dead lazy. So, there's an interesting thing. You said about wanting to be a painter. So, first oil paintings I started making was when I was 12. Because my dad painted and he left home and he left all of his stuff there.
Oh, did he?
And my brother painted. So then we just went, used all of his, as my father called it. He used to come home, my mother never divorced him, he used to come home and rip the electricity out or do this. And he said we were abusing his facilities.
Well, it sounds like your brother was your biggest influence from what we've said.
I think so, probably. My brother always hated me, and he still does, I think.
Is he still painting?
Yeah, he still paints. But I think that, like, because I was sort of like, I didn't obey any of the rules, and I've done all right. And he was very obedient and really wanted our father's approval and did everything correct and was a star student at art school and all of that.
Do you think he resents your success, if you called it that?
Yes, yeah, he does. And my father. They're both very jealous people. They don't celebrate family achievement, finally. I was talking to Huddy, and I said to him, one time, well, if I... talking about when I get my one-man show at the Tate, I said, well, maybe it will be me who gets the one-man show at the Tate.
Yeah.
I said, I couldn't be happier... if it was that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it really surprised me because he said that, and that was my instantaneous feeling. And then I thought,
so coming from the heart rather than the brain.
And I thought, well, how weird my family are to their attitude.
Yeah.
Because, it's very warming when you notice that's your, you surprise yourself.
What do you reckon you'd like to be if you weren't an artist?
Well, the only thing I've ever thought of, I know that my great grandfather was. I was council road sweeper for a while, and I thought that I've always thought that maybe I could handle something like that. If I was of a calm disposition, I'd like to do something quite a menial and just like gardening or something.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm cut out for it, but I couldn't do a job. Though it's with me, the only thing that got me going when I was a kid, got me through my childhood was. Peter Cook, Dudley Moore, and making pictures.
When Steve was here earlier, you mentioned Winky Wanky Woo, and I knew that from Derek and Clive.
And that's interesting, because you said, but you got that poster as well, because of course I did that rude poster for Mountain Light. I think almost bloody brilliant.
Yeah.
I'm not taking the piss out there, but I'm taking the piss out the other time.
I figured that, yeah, so the poster you're talking about is, it was Gilbert and George as Morecambe and Wise, or vice versa.
Yeah, well, basically it said it's like Morecambe and Wise, but with better jokes.
Yeah. Yeah, and I liked it, and hence me buying it.
Well, it's fun, isn't it? That's what I think.
What have you got coming up, Billy?
Well, we've got that show running in New York for another couple of weeks.
Well, bearing in mind, this probably won't be out until start of January, really, I think.
We might possibly play a show with the group in London, which we very rarely do. We've always got stuff. We've got a new...
Are you doing anything with Steve, like L13?
Yeah, we've got this coming out. I've done a woodcut version of this. This is for the last... That's just a gorgeous one, isn't it? We've done one volume already, and we've got a third one coming, which is even bigger. And this is like, if you open it up, you can have that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, thank you.
It's got,
wow, that is gorgeous. I don't want to open it up in here, if you don't mind me.
Yeah, but that is something...
You'll get covered in
that's
oil.
That's going to be about 3 or 4 years' work.
Wow.
And then we've done one earlier one, we've got another one coming up, which is nearly twice the size. Oh, yeah, and I paint with Edgeworth over here as well. Me and Edgeworth paint together. Reminded me of things that I was doing in the mid 90s.
Yeah.
And I liked it, so I asked him if he wanted to come down and do some pictures. So Edgeworth came down. They were quite small on little canvas, weren't they? I said, why don't you do them off cardboard? Do big cardboard.
Oh, I love it on cardboard. So,
I said, that'd be an easy way to loosen them up. And he started one, and I said, yeah. I said, can I show you something? He says, yeah, sure. I said, why don't you do that? He goes, yeah, great. And then we realised that neither of us cared if we ruined each other's work.
Nice.
So what happened was, is we sort of just fell into painting together.
Yeah.
And it's real good because it's like, it's hard to be, I do it with Steve sometimes, but Steve's ego and my ego, they'll clash.
Oh, yeah.
But me and Edward, we're sort of like, I do something, they'll write my situation, but we'll keep that bit.
Yeah, it works.
And Edward's super easy going, you know, if I do something, he says, yeah, it's good enough. So do you reckon I should do it? Yeah, maybe.
And how are you with that being reversed? If Edgeworth wanted to go over yours, is that cool?
Yes, it does. We do that. Yeah.
Well, it's usually I would say I was like lead singer. So what would happen is I would probably say it's more likely I'll tell you that I think it's no good, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I said I don't think that's any good to you, Edgeworth. And he said, I said I'll just get rid of it. I said, can you do something to that because I can't do that. That's you do
yeah,
something.
Yeah.
But it's, I mean, it really is like, I'll sort of like, Edgeworth gives me all the room and does a lot of the work. So on them
collaborative ones, what goes on the bottom right-hand corner? Is it a collaborative work or is there a name for that collaboration?
There is a collaboration. It's called Heckler's Horse.
Nice, nice.
But that's just me and Edgeworth.
But all three of you, don't they just sit so well together, don't they?
I think so, yeah.
I suppose
great gently stands.
I can see that.
I think you're in that situation as well, because it's probably really unusual to, like when people come to the studio, there's never been to, like this sort of like an idea of what a studio might be like, which in your imagination,
yeah,
not, you know, wouldn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
Because we used to have other people working in as well, people coming to learn to do stuff. Yeah, so people would attach themselves to me and want to come and learn how I do it. And I'd give them feedback or teach them a bit. But they usually sort of like, those types, they usually sort of like, they want to take the thing and monetarise it. And I sort of say to them, this is lifetime, not
3 months, yeah. Almost 3 years. This is a lifetime question. I said, when you've got a light in your bed, on your deathbed, and so I did it the way I wanted, not the way they wanted. Well, that is unfortunately what goes on, and they don't realise it. They don't see it in themselves, and it is annoying. But unfortunately, they say, yeah, people have got... They've got sort of like mediocre minds, is the way I see it.
Yeah.
You know, because they really think that it's... I think it's a game about winning. And this is what's really funny about, like, when we're talking about the art world and that, because it's all about winning. I was trying to write a little poem this morning. I just... think it's like it's just a... An artist in galleries like a pet being trained with a carrot.
Yeah. And how do you feel being a part of a couple of galleries?
Well, I'm really lucky, because what happened was is I got asked to do what I do, because I did it for 30 years and that's why I got invited in.
Yeah.
So what happened was is, I mean, I still get a little bit annoyed if they sort of say, have you got any more of them?
Yeah, yeah.
And that gets on my nerves a bit. I think it's a sweetie shop. That does get my tits, but I don't do anything.
As a wild guess, could I guess that you haven't turned any into NFTs? Yes,
yeah, just it's called a token.
Yeah,
the tokenism. I've heard of it.
Damien just done a shitload of paintings on paper, and you could either buy the physical one or the NFT version.
Did he actually make them?
Yeah.
He really made them?
Yeah, and then what he'd done just maybe a month ago, that all the ones where people bought the NFT, he burnt the physical one.
All right.
So in his gallery, he had...
It saves us the job, doesn't it?
Yeah. So in his gallery, he had a couple of sort of furnaces going, and he would just lift up the glass and throw...
Well, you saw that thing we did in... when we did the Art Hate, like there was Steve in the posters, did a big thing called Art Hate. And we had Bring Back the Smokestack, and it was sort of organising a burning at Tate of the public, writing each week and nominate pieces of art to be destroyed in the furnace. But that was like 10, 15 years ago. And then we did a thing where I did a book, which we did a penguin. I did a novel, which was a penguin, selected poetry, a rip-off of a penguin. And they told us that they wanted it, they said they had to be destroyed. Or they were sent to them, and they said we didn't trust them not to resell them, so we'll burn it. And then we organised a book burning.
Brilliant.
And then we did a poster, we're still using their symbols, and then we did the picture of the Nazi book burning.
I was going to say that.
We're saying that it's and then I happened to be on Radio 3 that week, on Woman's Hour or something, and she asked, what's going on? I said, well, I've been asked to organise a book burning by attending books.
Brilliant.
So we really...
Brilliant.
We really rubbed
turn it round, yeah. Super.
But you know, the house was done in a big bonfire in the film. It was a film of it, and they're all being loaded into one of those dust bins with the chimney on it.
Yeah, labelling
the books in. And brilliant. I saw Damien's face, like, they're a little glad they're in here, you know, like, it's fucking pathetic.
Well, he even had a silver suit on, didn't
he? Yeah, that's so. I feel so bad for that.
I mean, he's doing all right out of it, though, you've got to say.
Yeah, so what? I mean, doing all right out of it. I mean, what a life. I mean, as I say, he's like Elon Musk, isn't he? I mean, do you envy that? You just sort of think, well, I'm glad it's not me. When I was in the Stuckist, we had a fellow who did neo-cubism. I said, well, it's all fine by me. I'm just glad I don't have to do it.
So if you're in here one day a week, what's the other six consist of?
Well, I do a lot of work on myself, like I do record, I make lots of records. We made 21 albums during the lockdown.
Fucking hell.
And they all got to come out on vinyl, because we do everything on record. So that takes up a bit of time. Not too much time, because I'm quite quick. I'm working on my writing every morning. I've been working on a novel for the last 12 years. Another novel that no one wants.
And if anyone wants to see what you're doing, Billy, where can they see what you're doing, be it on a website or social media?
How do you put a little bit up on Twitter? Is it Twitter, Huddy?
Instagram.
And Steve, L13 have stuff. Lehman Morpin have a web page with the new New York Gallery on it. I mean the new New York exhibition.
Carl Friedman have some stuff up, but my major gallery, Neugram Schneider, don't do.
And they don't.
They don't have anything up. They don't do any of that. And they're the big boys. They'd find that a bit too vulgar, I think.
Their website's just a plan.
Is that what it is? Well, that's pretty much all my set questions asked, Billy.
Good. Well, whatever you want, I don't mind.
Thank you, mate. I appreciate your time you've given. And I hope I've not got in your way too much.
Not at all. You can ask more if you want. I don't mind.
I just end up forgetting that I'm recording and, walk 20 feet away from the mic.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be a problem, isn't it?
It's been beautiful to watch this take transformation, though, from...
Well, you're welcome today.
Is that
here?
Nine on
blank canvas.
What's the real time, Paddy? Well, hope you enjoyed that episode of the Ministry of Arts podcast. So we wasn't dictated to by advertisers, we decided from the offset to go ad-free, which means, obviously, we had to self-fund. So we set up the Ministry of Arts Patreon page. And without that support, we would not be able to produce this podcast. So if you like what you hear and you're able to support the podcast, just go over to the Ministry of Arts Instagram profile. You'll find a Linktree drop-down box, which will direct you straight to our Patreon page. And for the price of a cup of coffee, you can help keep us growing week by week. But if you're not able to do that, that's fine, because this content is free for everyone. But leaving a review on whichever platform you listen to your podcast, that really does help us get noticed and anyone else looking for an art podcast. Or even giving us a positive shout out on your social media. Everything is appreciated. But either way, thanks for listening. And until next week, ta-da.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.